Years ago, H.G. Wells visualized roads such as these in his science fiction fantasies. And today they're a reality.
You're listening to The Afternoon Commute with John Adams and Chris Kendall.
The date is Monday, March 16th. And this is it's 2015 and it's Afternoon Commute, and we got Jan Irving riding along with John. And yeah, what are we going to talk about? We got now you guys said that you want to talk about the CIA and the media.
The CEA, right, Jan?
The Central Entertainment Agency, or the other one, the good name for them is the Central Entertainment and Information Agency.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, that's real good. A friend of ours once came up with an idea that the CIA was just a traveling troupe of actors.
Well, you know, we don't want to leave out the musicians and playwrights and authors, and, you know, I mean, you know, all of these types of groups are, I mean, if you imagine you have a large band, you're like the Rolling Stones or whatever, I mean, that would be MI6, I guess, not CIA, but, you know, and you're traveling around the world with all your equipment and your roadies and all this stuff, I mean, you know, what better cover is there to go around and do intel operations? But, you know, of course, when you get in and study guys like Miles Copeland, who helped found the CIA, you see it everywhere there.
That's right. The dad of Stuart Copeland, they actually had a Rolling Stone article in the 1980s about how Stuart Copeland's dad was was instrumental in the CIA.
Yeah, absolutely. He was. So, sorry, I was just starting my own recording. I didn't launch it quite on time there. But, yeah, you know, so Stuart Copeland for the band The Police, Sting, I mean, all those guys are intel. But, you know, once you get that it's the CIA and those agencies who make all of these films about the CIA going running around the globe and stopping terrorism, I mean, it's just a load of baloney. I mean, you know, what terrorism there is mostly caused by the governments themselves, including the CIA. But, you know, what people don't realize is that they're essentially the ones who are behind the entertainment, behind the movies and things, selling that, you know, the CIA is always out there to defend people. I mean, they're not. You know, the CIA's goal is really to degrade society with dysgenics and always peddling the most degenerate crud that they possibly can, whether it's, you know, the 60s sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or Miley Cyrus today, or, you know, you can go through and you can find this stuff throughout time. And it goes essentially back to Edward Bernays. We exposed a lot of this with Joe Atwell in our article, Manufacturing the Deadhead, and how they promoted Enrique Caruso and these guys, you know, to promote sexual thinking and to basically get everybody into a state of wild sex and everything while they were trying to, you know, while they were claiming, excuse me, that they were trying to bring light to venereal disease so that they could get rid of it. And of course, from then to now, venereal disease has gone up like a thousandfold. It's ridiculous, right? But they always, what I was just going to say is they always hide it, you know, behind this philanthropic lip service.
Yeah, let's get more into that. I would like you to talk about the idea of just an example of like Aldous Huxley and Timothy Leary and Gordon Wasson, who you've done a great job at exposing, by the way. I just wanted to mention that and say great job.
Thank you.
I want you to talk about the idea of the lifetime actor, that these guys really don't, these guys are playing roles. These guys have roles set out for their entire life. And Chris and I, we've actually talked a lot about the movie The Prestige. Have you ever seen that movie?
What's it called again?
The Prestige. It's about magicians who take on a lifetime role of illusion.
No, I have not seen that I am aware of, but that sounds interesting. And actually, it was Joe Atwill, my co-author on Manufacturing the Deadhead, who, and he's been on my show 13 times, but he's the one who came up with the notion of the lifetime actor, and it's perfectly fitting because once you get it, you know, like Gordon Wass, and he's always selling, oh, you know, I'm just a banker, and I did, you know, discovered magic mushrooms, and, you know, you start checking into his background, and I found a letter in the U.S. Library of Congress that showed that Wasson and Edward Bernays were close friends for 10 years, and Wasson was the head of propaganda, the vice president of propaganda for J.P. Morgan Bank. And then you go to Princeton University at the Mudd Library there, and you can, you know, pull up, you know, the CFR archives right there. And there are, you know, Wasson was at about 20% of the meetings that the CFR held between 1950 and the mid-60s, 1951 maybe in the mid-60s. But, I mean, there are many dozens of citations. In fact, yesterday on my Facebook page, I posted a meeting for Averill Harriman that Wasson and Alan Dulles both attended. And in fact, it says right here, roundtable meeting and dinner for Honorable W. Averill Harriman, Monday, September 14th, 1959 at 5:15 p.m. Mr. Frank Altschul presiding, and it's got Hamilton Fish Armstrong. It's got Alan Dulles right there. And then the last name on the list, because it's under W, is R. Gordon Wasson. So Wasson was working closely with the Intel boys. And in fact, Wasson headed MKUltra Subproject 58, which became the infamous May 13, 1957 Life magazine article, Seeking the Magic Mushrooms. And so, you know, Wasson was behind the promotion of all of that and the PR of all of that. And even Maria Sabina had tried to expose Wasson as completely lying. You know, Maria Sabina, people always try to say that, you know, the mushrooms are spiritual and it doesn't matter what the CIA did. It's all blowback. But even Maria Sabina had tried to expose Wasson. And she's the so-called shaman or curandera that Wasson went to Oaxaca, Mexico, to Huautla de Jimenez, Mexico in the 1950s, and studied her and basically used her to promote the whole mushroom theme. But she came out with a book in 1981 with Alvaro Estrada exposing Wasson as a fraud. And, of course, no one talks about her coming out and exposing Wasson. And she says that they never used the mushrooms for spiritual purposes, that they were only used for healing, and that up until Wasson came, nobody had ever used him for that purpose before. So Wasson and his group of friends, they actually created the whole marketing campaign. And I've actually written an article, which people can find on my Gnostic Media website. It's called Entheogens, What's in a Name? The Untold History of Psychedelic Spirituality, Social Control, and the CIA. And it goes into how Aldous Huxley and Humphrey Osmond and Gordon Wasson and Professor Carl A.P. Ruck, for instance, at Boston University, how they all colluded together to sell the idea that the mushrooms had been used for spiritual purposes. But what we found in writing that article was what the substances actually do is cause hypersuggestibility. And this is found throughout the literature. So whatever they told you the outcome of the experience was likely is the one that you would have. So if they told you it was a psychotomimetic, which means psychosis mimicking, well, you might have a psychosis mimicking experience. If they told you it was a psychedelic, then you might have a mind manifesting experience. And if they told you it was an entheogen, which means to generate God within, well, then you just might have a religious God manifesting experience. But when we get into the official documents, we can see that it's all social public relations, marketing, and spin.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, they're pushing the drug culture, and then introducing these hallucinogens, like, you know, telling everybody to take it, it makes you like hyper suggestive, and that, you know, that reminds me of, you know, like the drugs like Prozac and psychoactive drugs. From what I understand, that they are just like, you know, a few molecules in differentiation between like those type of drugs and LSD.
So the MK Ultra LSD studies, et cetera, opened up, and I'm not a medical expert, I'm an ethnomycologist, but opened up the research for them to create many dozens or hundreds more chemicals that are still in use today, but that stemmed out of the MKUltra research. And what most people don't realize is that, you know, the key names in psychology and psychiatry like Abraham Maslow and, you know, Carl Rogers and Humphrey Osmond and John Smythe, all of these guys, they were actually, you know, Gregory Bateson, actually he was an anthropologist, quote unquote, but all of these guys were actually working with the CIA and the MKUltra program. So they've done a really good job at covering up, you know, what the real agenda was. Other doctors who we know were MKUltra doctors, John C. Lilly. We have Jose Delgado, which he's famous for his crazy animal experiments. We've got David E. Worcester, Dr. Abram Hoffer, Dr. Alden Sears, Dr. Andrea Puhrich, Dr. Carl Pfeiffer. And, you know, and there's in my brain database on my website, I've got several dozen doctors listed there. And a lot of these doctors also happen to work under Dr. Henry A. Murray's department at Harvard, which was the Harvard Social Relations Department. And that includes, like, Dr. Thomas Chiu, Dr. Tim Leary, even Dr. Theodore Kaczynski was experimented on by Murray's department at Harvard. And then, of course, in retaliation, Theodore Kaczynski became the infamous Unabomber and tried to blow all the others who did that to him to smithereens, but we're not told the rest of the story on that. So he was very specifically targeting those involved in the MKUltra project.
Hmm. Yeah, don't forget Dr. Richard Alpert.
And, well, sure, yeah. Ram Dass was definitely there. Yes, he was there. Yeah, B.F. Skinner was there. But what you have to realize is that pretty much all of those guys, and, you know, it's either public relations or social relations that they all work around. And Terrence McKenna bragged that he was recruited and worked in public relations for 15 years. But the whole team around the Esalen Institute up in Northern California, that whole thing sort of stems out of the Harvard Social Relations Department. And then it was Esalen that really sold this whole agenda onto society. And, of course, that was headed up originally by Aldous Huxley and Gerald Hurd. And then they put Dick Price, who was also in the Harvard Social Relations Department, and what was the other guy's name? Michael Murphy or whatever they put as the other guy there. And then, of course, Gregory Bateson, who was OSS, and he was one of the key founders of the CIA. Along with Stuart Copeland's dad, he was there. And they're all, you know, Michael Murphy is the other co-founder of the Esalen Institute. But all of these guys stem from and around the Harvard Social Relations Department. We can see several teams that they had put together. There was a team of these guys in Greenwich Village. There was one up in San Francisco. There was one in L.A. Those were the main ones. Most people think that the psychedelic revolution happened up in Frisco, but they actually launched it simultaneously in several major cities at the same time.
Yeah, I got a question real quick. Like I was gonna say with Richard Alpert, he became Ram Dass, and you see this infusion with the New Age, with the drug culture,
right?
And how that actually played out. I tend to think of all of these guys as culture creators. They're literally designing a culture. In fact, in B.F. Skinner's book, Freedom and Beyond, I think it's called, and he actually has a chapter in there about designing culture. And so you have, you know, I know you've mentioned someone like Marilyn Ferguson with, you know, the Aquarian conspiracy.
Sure.
And that type of stuff. Don't you think that the New Age in itself, like, we're actually living in a New Age culture for the most part?
Well, you know, they're really trying to push it, you know, and we are for a large part, but a lot of people haven't bought the poison that the CIA wants everybody to buy, you know. Which, you know, if you go back, Marilyn Ferguson's book is actually based on Changing Images of Man. There was a 1974 version and then a 1981 version, and that's published by the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, that was also involved in a lot of the MKUltra research. But you can see the whole agenda laid out in the 1974 version of that book, and you have James Campbell and all of these guys working there with them. Alan Watts, the famous hippie philosopher, was involved in all of that. But they're all working together on this project. But essentially, yeah, they manufactured this whole New Age religion that you can see stemming out of Changing Images of Man and, you know, this whole group from the CIA and military intel, and they're promoting this all over the place. And it's basically, it's a degradation of society. It's a degeneration, a neo-feudalism, you know, lots of sex, drugs, and partying. Yeah, you're going to be spiritual if you don't bathe and if you just party the rest of your life. You know, that's actually what they... sell to the public. And a lot of the public have bought it. A lot of them have woken up and seen through the agenda. A lot of them are in the process of waking up. But, you know, these guys definitely have sold that agenda. You know, Aldous Huxley, which I exposed in my recent article, Entheogens, What's in a Name, he very specifically states that they have to destroy Christianity to peddle this agenda, because Christianity was their largest obstacle to basically destroying humanity and society. But basically, when you get in and you read all their books and their works and everything, what you can see that they're pushing is this neo-feudalism, a return to the primitive, as Ayn Rand called it. You know, and even like Terence McKenna's book, Archaic Revival, he got the term from Gregory Bateson, who worked with him at the Esalen Institute. Gregory Bateson, of course, was OSS, helped found the CIA. Gregory Bateson called it Native Revivalism, and then Terence McKenna changed that to the Archaic Revival, and he sells his version of it. Tim Leary's old girlfriend, who was involved in the whole fiasco when Leary, quote-unquote, escaped, you know, and he goes to... Africa or wherever, and he's hiding out, and then he gets up to Switzerland. Well, his girlfriend during that was Joanna Harcourt Smith, and she's the heiress of the Harcourt Brace Yovanovitch publishing house. And, you know, she's an agent. She runs the Future Primitive podcast. Her ex-husband is John Lamb Lash, who sells that whole agenda as well. But they're all promoting that same agenda, you know, and it's not the same thing, though. Each of them promotes a different aspect of it. Like, if you go to my website under the Brain Database and you pull that up, you can look under Fourth World Battle for the Collective Mind, which is based on William Sargent's book, Battle for the Mind, and they all, like, you know, love this guy. But we see a lot of things that they're doing to dumb down society, including compulsory education, the so-called entheogenic experience, alien abduction. In fact, the first alien abduction experience was published by John G. Fuller, who is one of the MKUltra researchers, and published a book called St. Anthony's Fire in 1968. But I'm in the process of exposing Fuller's whole role in that. And then you get into the ancient aliens. We know that A Course in Miracles, you know, the famous spiritual book written by Helen Schuckman and William Thetford, that was actually William Thetford worked for MKUltra subproject 89 and 69. So even, you know, this
that was the Research Institute for Inner Peace.
right, exactly. And, of course, that was all CIA funded. And then we have December 21, 2012. You know, what's interesting when we get into that, it's, you know, Terence McKenna's promoting that. He takes a lot of that from the Jesuit priest Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who they all, you know, talk up as some saint. And Pierre was behind one of the key people behind the Piltdown hoax, that big academic fraud in the 1910s and 20s. And then Daniel Pinchbeck became the later poster boy for that. Daniel Pinchbeck's mom is Joyce Glassman. She was a part of the Greenwich Village team in New York. She worked with Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, and William Burroughs. And so, and then, of course, they all, you know, had that team in New York, and then they eventually went to the Naropa Institute and founded that and spread out from there. And then there's destruction of the family, destruction of the middle class, the environmental movement, feminism. We know that feminism was founded by Gloria Steinem, and Gloria Steinem was, in fact, a CIA agent, and that's made very clear from DCI William Colby, the former head of the CIA, stating, quote, "I might quote Miss Gloria Steinem, one of those so assisted, who commented that the CIA, quote, wanted to do what we wanted to do, present a healthy, diverse view of the United States, quote, end quote," and then quoting again, "never felt I was being dictated to at all." And that's directly off of the CIA's website, admitting, you know, that's FOIA.CIA.gov, admitting that Gloria Steinem was CIA. And so we can see the feminism is involved, fluoride in the water, the Gaia hypothesis is involved in that, geoengineering, global warming, genetically modified foods, fallacious logic and getting people not to trust their own five senses. And, you know, there's a whole, we could do several shows on quantum physics and how that's all a fraud. But then, you know, then the music, neo-shamanism, the New Age movement, pharmaceutical industry, pornography, positive thinking, which is essentially off-balance thinking and dismissing anything that's so-called negative without studying it first, which, of course, is just killing the messenger, and it's not using critical thinking. You always need to take the information in first to know what it actually is and if it's, you know, true or false, positive, negative. You can't just judge something just because, oh, it's a conspiracy or what, it's negative, it's political, I don't want to know that. Anything that can protect you and yours has the potential to be positive. Then the psychedelic revolution, psychiatry, I just mentioned quantum physics, we have the sexual revolution, television, the Council of Nine, UFOs and close encounters, vegetarianism and veganism, virtual reality, and you can also throw in transhumanism with that, wheat, W-H-E-A-T, as in bread and grains. That's one of the biggest tools that they use to keep the masses dumbed down and sick. If you guys out there eat wheat, I highly recommend you cut it out of your diet. Also, the low-fat, low-salt diet is a big scam. The brain, 70-plus percent cholesterol. Every cell in your body is made up of fat. So then you got to ask yourself why they've been selling the low-fat, low-salt, high-grain diet for the last nearly a century. And then you get into the, you know, Woodstock and World Citizen and stuff from there. But all of these things, you know, if you just see, look at one thing, you might not see it. But if you step back and you look at all of these different things that are all being promoted by CIA and other intelligence agencies, and, you know, we don't want to leave out MI6 and Mossad, you know, they need to be mentioned as well. But when we step back and we see this larger agenda that they're selling all of these things, then we can begin to understand it.
Yeah, it's like this synergistic coordination of all this different stuff that kind of all works together, how the media and the entertainment industry, me and John were just talking about that, how if you look at certain things, there's a definite coordination there between the two, like with movie releases and the releases of television series that coincide with quote-unquote events, you know, supposedly, you know, real life events, which are actually, them too are staged, and they too, from a lot of, research and into it, they employ actors just as if, which makes sense if you're looking at it from, the necessity to control a situation.
Well,
what better way to do it than.
Let me give you some more insight on that as well. And, you know, James Fadiman, he's another one of these MKUltra researchers that was also under Henry A. Murray's department at Harvard in the social relations department, and he sells all these Agenda 21 films. His wife was Ken Kesey's lover and all this stuff. But they're always, you know, peddling this same stuff. But if you talk to James Fadiman, you'd be like, well, I mostly, you know, spent my time in the theater at Harvard. Well, why would somebody go to Harvard to study theater? Well, if you think about it, you know, theater and acting and all of that allows you to be on stage in a group, in front of a group of people and lie to them, put on a whole act, a whole show. And so, of course, this would be valuable to intelligence agencies. So, you know, Harvard, you go to Harvard to study theater. That's kind of weird. But when you think about it, of course, he's studying social relations and he's studying acting. You know, and, you know, yeah. And meanwhile, if you check his background, he's working with Wernher von Braun and the Lockheed missile systems and all of this stuff, you know, and I mean, it's just totally contradictory to the image and New Age spiritualist nonsense that he pushes. But You know, so once we get the acting, you know, they need the actors because actors are good liars. They need the musicians because musicians travel all over the world and they carry all this equipment and all these people and this whole presentation so they can hide, you know, Aldous Huxley, who is one of the key architects behind MKUltra. He was a screenplay writer, you know, and it's like, you know, you can go into the Firestone Library at Princeton, into the John Foster Dulles Library there, and all of these private letters with Aldous Huxley and Julian Huxley are in there. Well, why would they be there, huh? But you know, it's because Aldous Huxley was one of the key people behind that, and he's, you know, in his letters there, you can actually go through and read, you know, these conversations and debates and stuff. But at the Mudd Library at Princeton, there is an entire manuscript, unpublished, of Aldous Huxley's that, you know, it's a spin article. It talks about, you know, it's called Enemies of Freedom. But meanwhile, it's every single detail of how to do dysgenics against the entire population, every detail of it. So, of course, he's promoting it as, oh, well, we have to warn people and stop all of this. But meanwhile, he's the one running the program.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've got a little quote here I wanted to read for you, Jan, because I didn't know if you actually were aware of this book. And you brought up the Stanford Research Institute.
Sure.
And this book is called The Politics of Contraception by Carl Gerassi. You know who Carl Gerassi was?
Name doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, well, Carl Gerassi was the inventor of the pill.
Okay, well, hold on a second, because let me read you something from here. It might take me just a second, but who is the woman that, hold on a second, birth control pill. So I've got under here that Margaret Sanger helped to create the birth control pill. But what's interesting, and let me just pull this up for you guys. I have it in my Princeton documents from the Mudd Library, so I just have to find it here. But so basically what it is in the Princeton documents, there is a whole conversation from Julian Huxley talking about having a global Margaret Sanger Day for creating the birth control pill. Now, the idiocy of the intelligence community is that, oh, look what we did. We created the birth control pill, and we're going to destroy the family and have all of this free sex and everything. But what they did in reality is they caused a population explosion. You know, their goal was to destroy the family, then create a huge influx of population, and then blame the masses for their own actions. I mean, if they were really trying to limit the population, they wouldn't have created the birth control and you know, create wild sex drug parties to promote it all. But let me just see if I can find it. Might be the David E. Lithenthal papers at the Mudd Library. And I'm just looking for the actual thing here. Anyway, I'll have to find it. I'll try and find it while we're in the it could be the Edward Mead Earle papers at Princeton as well. But I'll find that and see if I can find the letter that he wrote. It was just ridiculous promotion of Margaret Sanger and the whole birth control and everything. And meanwhile, like I said, it was all about destroying the family and undermining everything. But they've literally created.
I was just going to say, about women's rights.
It was never was about women's rights at all. But you know, and what they did was they destroyed, you know, the real femininity that is women and being a mother and all of that, for wild sex drug parties and single mothers that are then reliant upon the state for survival because they destroyed the family. And that was the real goal. And so, hold on, I'm just looking for this document. Maybe it's the Hamilton Armstrong. Jeez, I've got several correspondences here from Julian Huxley from Princeton. But anyway, I will find that while we're talking here, and I'll share it with all of you as soon as I find that. But it's really, really psychopathic stuff.
I'll read this Huxley quote here.
Okay.
And what Carl Gerassi is talking about is, he's talking about how Huxley created the introduced the idea of the catchphrase "the pill" into the vernacular. Okay.
Which one, Julian or Aldous Huxley?
Aldous.
Okay, that's good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah, he. Here's the page. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I should mention that I've got a whole bunch of Julian Huxley's eugenics and dysgenics papers in front of me that I pulled from Princeton. Go ahead.
Let me read this here. So here's a quote from something that Huxley wrote, and Huxley wrote this in the final chapter of Brave New World Revisited. It's called "What Can Be Done," and he says. He said, "But all of this, needless to say, is most infinitely easier said than done. The annual increase of numbers should be reduced, but how? We are given two choices, famine, pestilence, and war on the one hand, birth control on the other. Most of us choose birth control and immediately find ourselves confronted by a problem that is simultaneously a puzzle in physiology, pharmacology, sociology, psychology, and even theology. The pill has not yet been invented." And then Gerasi says down here, "Huxley wrote these words 2 years before the oral contraceptive was introduced into medical practice. Deliberately or inadvertently, he thus fathered the term the pill in currently accepted sense, a piece of esoterica that I was delighted to uncover on rereading Huxley's book recently, since I had always assumed that the pill had simply slipped into our vernacular gradually and anonymously." Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, quite. So I just found those other documents with Julian Huxley. So this is from the Arthur Kroc papers at the Mudd Library at Princeton. This is box 29, and correspondence is box HI to HZ if anybody is in the Princeton area. They want to check that out. So February 27, 1961, Sir Julian Huxley, International Chairman, World Tribute to Margaret Sanger. And he says, "Dear Julian, I am honored by your request to join the International Committee being formed to commemorate the life work of Margaret Sanger. But as one who comments on the public issues in the press, I think it best to confine my judgments on these issues that form that form of expression. However, if I may still contribute a personal message to the tribute you are preparing, I should be glad to have the enclosed added to the others." And then the name of Margaret Sanger belongs to the few human beings who have sought and, despite the heavy oppression which ignorance, bigotry, and public and private hypocrisy reserve for the truly great, have helped to achieve what measure there exists of man's emancipation from all these. And then this is Arthur Kroc. And then this is a document from April 23, 1961, to Arthur Kroc from Sir Julian Huxley. It says, "Dear Mr. Kroc, the year 1961 marks the 45th anniversary of the work of Mrs. Margaret Sanger. It was 1916 that this inspired woman began the great Planned Parenthood movement, which has contributed so much to the welfare of millions of families throughout the world. The critical nature of the population explosion," which, of course, they promote with Aldous's books and everything in the Brave New World, "which is now threatening human development in much of the world and particularly affects so many of the newly independent nations, has brought Ms. Sanger back into the position of leadership. Together with outstanding Americans, she is leading the fight in her country to create public awareness of the menace of this new crisis. Now, with 45 years of dedicated work and full of deserved honors, she has plunged into the struggle again in the conviction that the population explosion, if not dealt with, can destroy civilization." What this is actually exposing is it's very likely that World War II, et cetera, was just the elites putting a bunch of boys in ditches with guns, having their wives make the guns, and then have them all kill each other off. It was just a massive genocide. And, of course, the wars are always, you know, the leaders always bring the masses into the wars. The people never have anything to do with that nonsense, but they're the ones who die. And this letter is addressed to you, among other world leaders. I have accepted the duties of honorary international chairman for a two-day celebration in New York on May 11th and 12th, which will honor Ms. Sanger on the occasion of this 45th anniversary. The importance of this event will be greatly enhanced if you will consent to join our committee and become one of the honorary international sponsors of our tribute to Mrs. Sanger. We fully understand that your many duties may not permit you to attend. In such case, I hope you will designate one of your officials or associates to replace you. In any event, I believe that you will want to send a few words of greeting addressed to Ms. Sanger in recognition of her 45 years of service to humanity. And honoring Ms. Sanger, we are giving recognition to one who has made an immense contribution to the welfare of mankind. And again, you know, they're the ones promoting all the free sex and the pills and all that stuff, which actually had the inverse impact. Whereas, you know, like if you look at, you know, black families, for instance, prior to the 1920s, 1930s, they had about a 7% divorce rate. Now they have about a 7% success rate. So all of this inner city, all of these kids, all the gang warfare, all of that stuff, it ties to the Huxleys and their promotion of the Brave New World. And this is what they were designing against society. And then he goes on, I hope for your cordial response with an accompanying message addressed to Mrs. Margaret Sanger. Sincerely yours, Sir Julian Huxley. So, you know, we can see on every level that Julian and Aldous were in on this. Aldous Huxley running and heading up MKUltra and promoting the drugs and free sex and all of the nonsense coming out of the Esalen Institute. And then, as it so happens, Sir Thomas Henry Huxley, he's the one who created the modern education system in the universities. He was also Darwin's propaganda manager.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting how, well, scientism as well. I mean, that's a big thing that's being pushed in the modern day with the appeals to authority and that kind of stuff being continually pushed. And then now I hear a lot about the idea of, you know, quantum physics and what that means. Right. Yeah. And that, you know, that so nicely ties in with the New Age and this, you know, abstraction of thought where everything is kind of, you know, up. Kali, that article you sent me, John, about
quantum theory.
I'm going to forward that to Jan.
You need to look at that.
Charles Eisenstein is the guy's name. You ever heard of him, Jan?
No, but I do. You know, I do know that quantum physics is a big fraud. As it turns out, drum roll, Albert Einstein worked with guess who? Anybody want to take a guess? He worked at the New York First Humanist Society of New York with Julian Huxley. And Albert Einstein, of course, he was a major, major fraud and plagiarist. There's a couple of really good books out there that expose Einstein as just a complete moron and plagiarist. But manufacture and sale of Saint Einstein.
And the Zionist.
Right. John Bjerknes has published two books, The Manufacture and Sale of Saint Einstein and also Albert Einstein, the Incorrigible Plagiarist, that expose Einstein. But, of course, you know, again, it happens that Einstein lived in the Princeton area, and he was Julian Huxley was often at Princeton, and so they're working together and basically conspiring together to create this nonsense. But quantum physics, you know, you have behind quantum physics, aside from Einstein, you have Max Born, Paul Dirac, Werner Heisenberg, John von Neumann. And these, Wolfgang Pauli, these guys essentially work to create what is the whole quantum physics fraud. And, you know, if you listen to guys like Amit Goswami on the Joe Rogan show, I mean, this guy uses terms like quantum physics is the merger of science and religion, and none of us understand what quantum physics mean. See, whenever, you know, most intelligent people know that whenever there is a contradiction in information, it's either a lie or an error. But what quantum physics seeks to do is get people to not trust their own five senses and then to appeal to magic whenever there is a contradiction. Oh, well, we can't know anything, rather than recognizing contradictions as lies or errors and doing more research to get to the bottom of it and reverse engineering all the fallacies and lies and contradictions so that we can come to understand the truth. But it was, you know, it was Albert Einstein and Julian Huxley and then their team that was behind the creation of this whole quantum physics fraud. And then, you know, all of these guys, Amit Goswami, et cetera, just, there's a whole bunch of them I could name, but they're all just out promoting this total fraud on society. And you can't know anything. There's, ladies and gentlemen, there's like 11 or 12 simultaneous possibilities and realities happening, and you just can't look up anything or know anything, so therefore you might as well not try. And you know what? For that matter, just appeal to us for anything you need to know. So the idea is to get people to not trust their own five senses and to actually think that reality doesn't exist, you know? Like, you know, I mean, they want people to believe that we live in Roger Rabbit land.
Yeah. Well, the multiverse, I mean, give me a break on, I mean, it's, okay, the multiverse, what's interesting about that whole concept, if they're going to invoke limitless, Neil deGrasse Tyson was on Joe Rogan, and he's explaining how, you know, nature never makes one of anything. So if there's a multiverse, there's also multiverses. So they're invoking, like, this limitless number of untestable, unseen universes that where, you know, you have limitless numbers of variation and stuff like that. And it's an answer to the Anthropic principle and the cosmological constant that, you know, that's they're having to deal with this in science, because, like, why is everything fine-tuned and stuff like that? Well,
and here's a real kicker, if I can add something to that. So in logic, there's something known as the onus of proof, and whoever doesn't meet the onus of proof, it's called arguing the arbitrary. And if someone is arguing the arbitrary, if they can't supply their evidence of their claims, it's dismissed by default. So the entirety of quantum physics is essentially bereft of any onus of proof, and it's entirely arguing the arbitrary. It's just speculation. And again, Amit Goswami and all of these guys admit that they have no evidence to support their claims.
Yeah, I mean, it's logical fallacies. I mean, if you get yourself in any kind of discussion with anybody that's, you know, a Darwinist or, you know, that buys into a lot of stuff like global warming and stuff like that, they immediately go into just an assortment of logical fallacies to come back at you with, appeals to authority, appeals to consensus, name calling ad hominem, If, you know, you can just go down the list, and then, like, you know, when I get involved with it, I just point out and I point links to it, because that the skeptic, so-called skeptic community, like Sam Harris and James Randi, you know, all of those types.
James Randi, you'll like this. I have him in my research database too. So James Randi, he could be one of the Kinsey pedophiles, but he works with the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, and is with Dr. Louis Jolyon West, who we know is MKUltra, Dr. Martin T. Orne, who we know is MKUltra, and Margaret Singer is there. Margaret Singer was involved in the brainwashing of Patty Hearst, and also, ironically, went to Einstein College of Medicine, and so we also have Pamela Freyd and some others there, but James Randi is one of these people working with the False Memory Syndrome Foundation to help cover up the entire MKUltra fiasco.
Yeah, they did that in San Diego when I was living out there. They had this big trial about this daycare that had these underground networks of tunnels where they were, like, taking children down there and
abusing them.
Talk
about the McMartin preschool?
I think
Martin
that's what it was.
In Manhattan Beach, California.
Yeah, that was L.A. Yeah, you were mentioning.
Yeah, and that's how they came in and discredited all the testimony. It's like false memory. You know, it's false, like,
right.
A collective.
Well, and most of those guys that work for the False Memory Syndrome Foundation were CIA and MKUltra, and their whole thing has always been to cover up all of the MKUltra stuff. And, of course, you know, Kinsey and the whole pedophiles and trying to legalize sex with little boys and stuff is their agenda behind a lot of that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's how it's done.
Oh, you know what? In fact, hold on just a second. One of the connections that with the McMartin Preschool happened to tie up to, they were bringing the kids up to the San Bernardino Mountains near where I live, to a town called Crestline, and then they would take them to a local airstrip, maybe over in Lake Arrowhead, and they would fly these kids around the country and then fly them back. And then the kids would tell these stories about how they went on an airplane and did all this stuff. And the parents thought that they were just joking and making it up, you know. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that they actually were flying the kids all over the country. When the parents would drop them off at school, they'd immediately run them up to the San Bernardino Mountains and then fly them around the country, get diddled, and then fly them back and have them back at the school before their parents were there to pick them up.
Yeah, well, shit, yeah. And then they into their abuse, they incorporate, from what I understood, they may or may not have actual shark tanks with live sharks in the shark tank. So the children are describing this stuff that sounds outlandish, but it's real.
Right.
You know, they're really... You know, and so that, you know, when they go and start questioning them, they're talking about all this outlandish stuff. But, you know that's really what they saw.
Richard Ofshe was also a member of the False Memory Foundation. And he even does a lecture on why people confess to things that they didn't do, which if you understand it, and what he's talking about in this lecture, you flip it upside down, and it's up on the Gnostic Media website. If people just search it, they'll find it up there under podcast. But you flip backwards what he's saying, and he's explaining to the other people there how they can get others to confess to things that they didn't do to cover up their own crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you say
this is MK Ultra worldwide, Jan.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's you know, most of it's focused in the U.S. and England, but there seems to be an overlap between the CIA, MI6, and Mossad working together on this stuff. Maybe French intel as well, because of the Pont Saint-Esprit incident that the French government helped to cover up.
But, like, mass media, you know, reporting on this type of stuff, like, just take the McMartin Preschool case, for instance, I'm going off of memory, but it was the most expensive trial. It was covered very heavily. There was all sorts of stuff pertaining to, you know, satanic rituals and all that type of stuff. I was a little kid when that was going on, and I remember it. And there was a lot of fear pushed into society because of this, right?
Right, right.
And it was all done by mass media. And mass media tends to homogenize a lot of people to get them induced into a state of fear all at the same time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. What their end goal or agenda would have to be, you know, would have to be researched to understand it. But, you know, I mean, we do have these same groups of people that overlap with MKUltra and all of this stuff, repeating the same things. But I was probably maybe in junior high or high school when that whole thing broke. I'd have to look it up. But it was, you know, I do remember being freaked out by it. Let me see. McMartin Preschool. So let's see. When did that story break? Wikipedia says the 1980s. Accusations were made in 83. So I would have been in junior high when that whole story broke, probably about 7th or 8th grade.
Hey, yeah, do you mind if I ask you a personal question real quick?
It depends on what it is. But you can ask it, doesn't mean I'll answer it.
did you grow up in Orange County?
I grew up in the Inland Empire. I grew up in a little town called Calum Mesa, which is next to a little town called Yucaipa.
Oh, yeah. I don't live too far away from there, so I know. Okay.
Yeah, I currently live off of the rim of the world, so...
Yeah, I know. I know where you live right now. I mean, okay. I don't know where your house is, but I know where that city is. Yeah.
Right. So I did live in Orange County for a while back in the 90s, I had a wife that was Serbian, and we lived down in Orange County when we weren't in Yugoslavia. So, you know, I did live down there on the corner of MacArthur and Main for a while.
Oh, shoot, that's right by where I grew up. I grew up in the city of Orange, so.
Yeah, there you go. So, well, let's not bore the audience with our, you know.
So, Chris, keep going with the evolution stuff.
Lawrence Krauss, you know who that guy is. He's touring around with Richard Dawkins now. And you sent me that article, John, about how he is, you know, has put out stuff, you know, pro-feminist, like propaganda and all this other stuff. And now he's on like a tour circuit with Richard Dawkins promoting the whole multiverse idea and how like everything came from nothing for no reason. And quantum physics. And
is that like when you pour a bunch of chemicals into a bucket and get life?
Yeah, well, or you know, it's sure to have happened on maybe life evolved in another multiverse and then transdimensionally ported here. You know, I mean, anything's possible, right?
Right. Well, under the multiverse in quantum physics, you just channel it out, you know, from your anus, and
sure.
Then you can, back, you know, you just
yeah, there you go,
make it up, you know.
Well, and then too, if you're going to go with that, then why not Bigfoot, flying saucers, everything that the so-called skeptic is supposed to be, you know, anathema to them? Well, if there's multiple multiverses, then how do you rule out anything at all?
Well, sure, and thank God that we have the History Channel to, you know, promote all of that total nonsense to the public. And with a name like History Channel, how can they doubt it, right?
The Hitler Channel, right?
What's that?
The Hitler Channel?
The Hitler Channel, right. And, you know, where they constantly promote anti-Germanicism and cover up the Bolshevik massacre of 60-plus million people, which I find very disgusting in and of itself, too.
Yeah, it's interesting how those people have, like, hijacked the reason and logic. And, like, you talk about the trivium method. You know, the trivium method and logical fallacies, I think they stand on their own for the most part. I mean, there's some that are listed that are pretty dubious, but for the most part, if you think about like logical, what is a logical fallacy and a list of logical fallacies and how they're used, it is pretty good tool for learning how to think and kind of navigate your way around through all this bull crap. You know,
sure.
There's a pretty good book called Straight and Crooked Thinking. I forget the author's name, but it goes into a lot of that and how it also explains how words themselves have emotional baggage latched onto them, so that when you go into a discussion and you use particular words, you are coloring your speech and prejudicing words.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, and that's the importance
right off the bat.
That's the importance of the trivium itself, is the trivium actually acts like a corkscrew when you're digging down into information. And for the audience that doesn't know, the trivium is general grammar, Aristotelian logic, and classical rhetoric in that order. And the general grammar composes who, what, where, when. The logic aspect is compromised of why, and the rhetoric is how. So first you gather your information, who, what, where, and when. What, you know, who am I talking about? Where was it? When was it? Et cetera. And then you get into the why. And, you know, the why is the logic aspect, and identifying the three categories of fallacies under relevance, presumption, and ambiguity, and identifying any contradictions in the information. And then, you know, by having all of the grammar, all of the who, what, where, and when, then we can understand the logic or the why something happened, and then we can explain how we came to that conclusion. So, well, the trivium in and of itself is a systematic repeating system, sort of like a corkscrew, where it, you know, constantly goes down and digs into the information until there are no fallacies left and everything is verified based hopefully on primary documentation. So, you know, that's right. Go ahead.
What about this? What you just got through describing is really closely parallels what the process you go through in the court systems, right? It's like the who, what, where, and where, why they, you know, and it has to be established, everything.
Well, it's supposed to be evidence. But it doesn't really that way. But yeah.
No, it's used against the population because the population don't understand that process.
Let me just say though that you are right on that. You know, it is on the prosecution to present any evidence, and that's why you're innocent until proven guilty, because you cannot prove a negative. Whoever has you cannot prove that you yourself did not commit something. It's on whoever is making the claim against you to supply the evidence, and then it goes through the court process and through the jurors, and then they say, okay, is this evidence founded and solid? Is it made up or whatever? And then we can get a conviction. But it's all based on the fact that you cannot prove a negative, whereas in France, they don't even have that. In France, logic doesn't apply, apparently. Apparently, you know, people who, you know, are expected to prove themselves innocent, you have to prove a negative, which is, of course, ridiculous and impossible.
Right. So, yeah, the courts are based on that, you know, structurally and everything. But, of course, you get railroaded because, you know, for the common average person, they don't understand the process or what's being done to them or how to even form a rebuttal.
Right. And they don't understand the language. You know, you need a Black's Law Dictionary. You need to be looking up every single word that they're using. You need to submit your own definitions to the court. You need to submit your own laws to the court whenever you do this stuff. And, you know, when people walk into a court, they expect the court to dictate to them what the laws are. But when you walk into a court, you bring your own laws that are on the books in, and you show them that. But if you don't submit any of your own laws that are on the records or anything, if you don't submit your own definitions, then they'll just assume that you're accepting theirs. You know, and on my website with Freeman Burt, we've covered a lot of this. But, you know, in fact, people can just go to that part of my website by going to slavesanonymous.com, and we've got a whole bunch of shows covering exactly this type of material.
A really worthwhile tactic would be to attack the premise. Okay, you're going into it and you have to accept the procedure and everything based on a premise that the courts and the system has authority over you. But if you go into it with the question like, you know, where is your evidence that the laws of the Constitution and the code apply to me just because I'm here?
Right. Well, you know, and you can
and
ask
if you,
for,
you attack the very premise of the whole procedure, and then you persist in asking, okay, where is that evidence? And then they have to then go into circular logic. Well, the code applies because the code said it applies.
There is a way to do it properly, but you can go in and request a demurrer, which forces the prosecution to provide all of their evidence and show that you're the person and all of this stuff. And usually most of this stuff will fall apart just under the demurrer.
Yeah. Yeah. If you just, you know, if you get a grasp on, you know, logical thinking and reasoning and stuff like that, you can fight the courts. You can go in there and win because they'll become so confounded that it is so outside their normal, you know, procedures, having to deal with somebody that is actually throwing it back in their face. Since they're incorporated and they're there for, you know, the profit motive, instead of having to spend all this time dealing with you and saving face at the same time, which is impossible if you have to depend on fallacious reasoning and stuff like that, you know, a lot of people can get off the hook. I do believe that. I mean, in certain instances, you know, not maybe in every case, but yeah, I mean, I think that's an illustration of how, you know, this can potentially be very useful, like learning how to, you know, think. I mean, just in so many, because we're attacked from so many angles, you have to learn the proper way to think and recognize fallacious reasoning and stuff like that so that you can defend yourself. I mean,
sure.
I think that's like very, very important.
It's absolutely essential, and that's why they've removed the trivium, et cetera, from, you know, grade school education. You know, this is the trivium was at its peak during the American Revolution in the 1800s. In fact, some of, you know, I've got newspaper articles like Canadian, et cetera, where they were discussing how they felt that the American Revolution was based on the trivium. And then, of course, when they brought in the compulsory education with John Dewey and all of that, that, you know, they immediately got rid of the trivium. And, you know, you definitely don't want young children studying logical fallacies, because then they would see all the lies that the grown-ups use. Wait, you know, well, how about you just stop lying? And then, you know, I mean, you know, to me, it's like, of course you want the children to understand the logical fallacies, but they don't want the children to know this stuff, because they would be able to, you know, realize that the politicians and all of these people are just constantly lying. Like, you know, you watch I have another website called popupfallacies.com, and when Osama bin Laden was murdered for his 9th or 11th time, I put out an episode on that. And, you know, in a 9-minute talk, Obama used like 89 fallacies.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's, well, you have to be a master at it to get on TV. I mean,
sure.
You know, and be somebody that people are supposed to, you know, look to for so-called leadership. But,
yes.
You know, it's amazing how, if you understand, or, you know, you familiarize yourself with a list of logical fallacies and kind of take some time to contemplate, like, a good one is the association fallacy, which is used all the time in support of scientism. You know, I used example last time on the call. It's like, you know, your toaster oven equals Darwin. You know, the same process that gave you your toaster oven gave you Darwin. So to you know, reject Darwin is to reject, you know, a warm piece of pizza to enjoy at lunch. You know,
let me ask you something. How do you define scientism?
Scientism, I define it as, I do believe there is such a thing as a scientific method. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You employ the scientific method from the day you're old enough to crawl around on the floor and pick up a block and stick it in your mouth. You're engaging in a methodology. You're discovering things about the world around you through a process. You know, feeling, tasting, touching, smelling, and all that stuff, and you're incorporating
right.
your five
well,
senses.
Well, let me just, you know, the reason why I'm asking you that is just to get your definition of it, because science has been really corrupted, especially by all of this new age and Kabbalistic nonsense and guys like Einstein, et cetera, that were just complete frauds. But, you know, the issue is that when you get in and you study the trivium, and I do recommend listeners go to, you know, my triviumeducation.com website. I keep everything up there for free. And there's, you know, study materials, lots of audio, video, everything that they can go through and begin to learn it. But in the trivium material with Gino Denning, he sent me some graphs, and I'm not sure. I'll have to check if they're up on the Trivium Education website, but, you know, explaining the scientific method. But what we're seeing coming out of academia is actually the corruption and co-option of the scientific mm-hmm. method. And again, it was Sir Thomas Henry Huxley who developed the modern education system, which he later in his diary before he died, he wrote that he had destroyed education, which was really the whole point of it. But anyway, you know, they create this whole system so that they can control the flow of information, and so that the masses are constantly under their control, and then they have a constant flow of the information upward toward them. But this false science and this academic fraud and, you know, these academic cells that commit this stuff, and I'm working on an article that exposes how they do it, but that should not be confused as science itself. You know, the whole confusion in science and all of the quantum physics nonsense pumped out by, you know, the quantum physics magicians, that is there to confuse people and to, you know, lead them away from the facts. So once we understand that there is a way to go through it, we can get back to the truth and we can get back to a true scientific method. But we have to realize, like, you know, what these academics do, and a lot of the professors are on the pay of various intel agencies. But what they essentially do is they create academic cells with like three academics per cell. And then let's say one of them is Professor Carl Ruck at Boston University, and another one is, you know, Dr. Brian Akers. And I've already exposed these guys. That's why I'm using these names. And you have another one, Fernando Benitez down in Mexico. So what these guys will do is they'll cite each other's own cons, or maybe Professor Peter T. Furst or something. They'll cite each other's own cons as evidence to support their claims. And then, so this is one cell. Let's say you have these three scholars, and then this cell will cross-cite another cell to, you know, and their frauds, and then the cells themselves cross-cite each other to further substantiate and bury the academic fraud. So the way to get around this is simply asking who, what, where, when, why, and how, and getting all the way down to the primaries and verifying them, and then you just see these blatant frauds in the academic world all over the place.
Or you can pick, you know, there's all this science out there.
Chris?
Oh, go ahead, John.
Oh, real quick. I'm going to have to go, but you guys continue talking, because I'm looking forward to listening to your interaction.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
you got to go?
Okay. Thank you, John.
Oh, yeah, thank you, John. I really appreciate you talking to us, man.
Yeah, and how long is the interview supposed to be?
Whenever you got to go, man. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of free form.
Jan, I'll send you that. I'll send you that book in the mail. You'll expect it in like a week or two.
All right, I appreciate it. You have the address, the PO box.
I think you so. Can you just email it to me again, and I'll do it.
Yeah, sure. And it's up on the store page or up on the donations page on the website.
Okay.
Really easy to find too.
Don't forget
to send them that.
All right,
that quantum physics article too.
I already sent it to him.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
It was nice to meet you.
Talk to you later, John.
Nice to meet you. Bye bye.
So, all right, Chris, go ahead.
What was I saying about? Science. You could go get scientific papers and stuff online, you know, that are available out there, like. Or for instance, I ran across JAMA, the Academy of Medical shit, whatever that stands for, but it's supposedly, you know, like a respected scientific publication, but you know, they there's an article, a peer reviewed article that talks about death by iatrogenic causes, doctors, you know, like and it's, you know, admittedly the third leading cause of death in the United States, the third leading cause of death. And then, but if you look at it and you take into consideration by the government, you know, their means of, you know, compiling these statistics and all that stuff, like, the VARS registry and all that with vaccine damage, like underreporting is like a major problem and stuff like that. So
well, sure. You know, and I've
so it's
I've
most
interviewed...
likely the leading cause of death.
Right. Well, that and wheat and gluten, I would say, is way up there as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've interviewed Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and he's a real bright, real sharp guy. I've read the research. I've been through Deerfield or whatever his name's claims and, you know, his whole scandal and all that. But, you know, for those who really want to know what happened, go buy a copy of Dr. Wakefield's book and read the evidence for yourself. Read the evidence against Dr. Richard Horton at the Lancet, et cetera. I mean, it's just,
it's
scandal on top of scandal. But, you know, I've talked with General Stubblebine and Rima Labo about Aldous Huxley's Brave New World and all of that. And they actually think that the promotion of vaccines is directly tied to the, and the increase of autism is to create a class of epsilons directly out of Huxley's Brave New World. And, of course, you know, the Huxley family has been a constant major theme in all this. But, you know, how the Huxleys haven't been exposed over and over throughout history is, you know, some of the biggest frauds is just mind-boggling. You know,
I want to say something about –
sociopathic. The only type of person that you could compare Aldous Huxley to would be like a Leon Trotsky, who helped kill 45 million people in Russia, you know.
Yeah, I want to say something about the Epsilon. Like, I was looking at that, and I went and grabbed a bunch of articles that were appearing online about how these corporations, especially like software developers, are seeking out autistic children to work because they get this fixation for
and they don't, like, they don't question, they just follow orders.
Yeah,
you know, that's exactly
they don't question,
they
follow orders, and they and they're like, they get numbers obsessed.
Right, we talked about this exactly with Rima Labo and General Stubblebine. And of course, General Stubblebine is the former commander general of Global Army Intelligence, you know, and he's admitted this stuff on my show.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that is so incredible. And I've heard the statistic that by 2025, one in two children are going to be autistic. I mean,
And they're, you know, they're really cranking up the get vaccinated propaganda lately.
Oh,
and,
my God.
You know, they really want parents eating that stuff up and all fearful. But the whole herd immunization thing is completely backward. I mean, if the herd is immunized, then what would the threat be of a couple kids that aren't? But, you know, you go to these countries like Afghanistan and stuff where they have these tribes that have never been to a doctor, et cetera, and the people are perfectly healthy. There's no teeth damage, no mental illness, no obesity, none of this stuff. And, you know, and it's like you compare that to all of the stuff that they're trying to promote here. But, yeah, I mean, it's a huge scandal. Clint Richardson is exposed a lot on vaccinations as well on his show. I definitely recommend people check out his show and his articles on that as well.
Yeah, I posted a video, a YouTube video on my blog, and somebody had just taken and strung together different clips from 1950s and 1960s sitcoms where the punchline is, oh, Timmy got the measles. Ha, ha, ha. It's all funny, and it's like obviously no big deal whatsoever, and that was pre-vaccination push. You know, so obviously measles is like no big deal. It's like on the level with chicken pox. Like you get it over with, and you're done with it. Very few complications come out of measles. Very few, if very seldom, does anyone die from measles. But yet now we're getting this propaganda to where that whole thing is flipped on its head, to where there's all these calls for like suing parents who don't get their children vaccinated, and all this other crazy stuff. And that,
yeah, well, you know, I would have to see the contract where I agreed to get the vaccination first to be sued by it. But you know, a government is a non-entity. It's, you know, I mean, it's a religion. There's nobody there but a bunch of psychopaths who put on Halloween costumes and then go around and force, you know, so-called government. But, you know, if you show me one of these damn vaccines that's been tested for safety and efficacy, you know, and none of them have, essentially. And, you know, they don't have any evidence to support any of their claims.
No, there's absolutely no proof whatsoever. And, you know, you can ask any of the vaccine advocates for proof. And of course, they're just going to immediately fall back on some fallacious reasoning like, you know, well, do you actually believe that the overwhelming majority of doctors are going to tell you to do something that's bad for you? That's just
right.
Not
or
possible.
Don't you think if the vaccines were dangerous, that the free market system would have taken them off of the market? Well, you know, not if they're suppressing it and getting doctors like Wakefield can who try to expose it. You know, I mean,
that's,
you know,
the,
rather than picking up, you know, whatever, hold on, whatever you hear from the media, rather than, you know, taking it as fact, if the media, if the mainstream media is attacking someone, that should give you a signal to immediately go out and research everything that you can on that person that's being attacked and, you know, their own work, everything that they've done, and get to the truth yourself. You know, just because, and especially because you hear the mainstream media parroting some lie, which 90% of it is, that should always clue you in that you need to go do more research. If you want to react emotionally to something, if you need to name call it somebody, oh, you actually think that, you need to ridicule them. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, right? Well, if you need to name call and do that kind of stuff, that should tell you that you're, you know, intellectually bankrupt of the facts, and you need to admit your own incompetence and just go out and do the research and lay your opinions aside, ask who, what, where, when, gather all the data, process it through why, remove the contradictions and fallacies, and then you can explain how you reached your conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just say, well, you know, if I go to a store, I buy a candy bar, it's got all the ingredients labeled on the side, but you want me to go get an injection? And, you know, what am I getting injected into me? If you just ask that simple question and look at what's in the crap, you probably would right there want to just say, no, thank you, you know?
Right, I mean, exactly.
Yeah, so you need to run here in a few minutes. Yeah, so what do you want to conclude with?
I don't know. You're the interviewer. You ask me.
Well,
the responsibility
I know, but there's so much stuff we're talking about. We're just going all over the road, and that's why it's called afternoon commute. But we want, you know, so.
Maybe do another show sometime or something if you'd like, you know, but I've got a lot of stuff coming up in the next 2 days and few days. I've got an operation and all good kinds of stuff coming up here, so looking forward to any of it. I got an inguinal hernia, so we've been asking for donations to help cover the medical cost of that. I got to raise $4,300 to cover that and a bunch of other crap. So, and you know, the Gnostic Media Podcast is listener funded based on donations and website purchases only. We don't do any advertising. We don't take corporate funds, money, that sort of stuff. So we can always use all the support we can get.
Cool, man. Yeah. 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 I really enjoyed this discussion here, man. I mean, we should do it again. Definitely. I would like that.
All right. Well, let's do it then. And we can pick up from where we left off or figure out something entirely different to discuss.
Yeah, I'd like to maybe go into like some other stuff, like, you know, nuclear bombs being a total hoax or maybe something like that. I don't know if you've
I've heard of that. I haven't looked into it in depth enough, but you know, there does seem to be some evidence that that most of the cigarette smoking being related, you know, to cancer seems to be, in my opinion, a cover up to cover up the nuclear, you know, the nuclear explosions actually being the cause of that sort of stuff. But, you know, I have come across evidence in the past that a lot of that may be faked as well. I don't know. I'd have to look at it more closely. I haven't done my grammar. Yeah. So,
well, we got the concept through imagery and films, and that all came out of Lookout Mountain and Laurel Canyon, and they admittedly employed a bunch of Hollywood producers and Hollywood people to work on the nuke bomb footage, you know.
Well, sure.
And I mean, that tells me right there something's up. But and then you look at some of the footage, and then I got a video on my YouTube channel where I just took a piece of the footage where the bomb is exploding, and then you could see where part of the explosion stays static through multiple frames while the rest of the explosion is still in motion, and that's like absolutely impossible. So
I haven't done enough research on it. I haven't even looked at that topic in probably 5 years, but you know, I do recall there being enough there to investigate further. I'm, you know, just focused on so many other things, you know, like the whole psychedelic revolution. That's such a huge mind control operation, it's ridiculous. The whole 60s counterculture and all was entirely run by the CIA, etc.
Oh, absolutely. It's good how we're kind of comparing notes here and how all this stuff kind of interlocks, you know, and it's been real helpful for me to kind of get some more information about this, you know, how the system actually works, you know. And
absolutely
good stuff, man. All right.
Well, I need to get going here, unfortunately, like I said, we can do it again sometime soon, and I think you got just about an hour and a half of good material here.
Yeah, excellent. So, yeah, we'll We'll keep in touch on the Skype, or is that a good way to keep in touch with you, or email, or
Skype or email? Skype if you send email, me okay. If you send me a message on Facebook, it's likely to get lost.
Okay, yeah, I'll just instant message you on Skype.
All right, it sounds good.
All right, thanks, Jan.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks to John as well, and we'll talk again.
All right, good deal. Good luck with your operation. I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care, man.